You are listening to Comedy Store Wrestling.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the world-famous Comedy Store here in Hollywood, California, for another episode of Comedy Store Wrestling. My name is Eddie Torres, and I'm being joined, as always, by the inappropriate one, Earl Skakel. How are you, brother?
Watching a little bit of Dynamite before I got here. I know we'll talk about it later, but that crowd was hot. It was very fun to watch, so maybe Tony Khan's got a writing partner this week.
Oh, wow. Okay. And today we're being joined by a very special guest. We got in the house the one and only Paul London. How are you, brother?
Howdy, howdy. Yeah, thanks for having me. Very cool.
It's an honor to have you here, man. You know, we'll get to some questions with you, and we'll also get to some topics about what's going on in wrestling. I know that you mentioned you're not really keeping up with the product on a daily, but, I mean, how much are you watching?
I watch whatever comes through my social media streams. A lot of are you guys familiar with AEW Botches?
Oh,
that's
no.
That's a good one.
I watch Botchamania. That's a shout out.
Botchamania is great. Yeah, I love Matthew. He's a great guy.
I can't watch that. It's too some of those like Sid's jump off the rope. Like
yeah. No, the freak accidents are.
Yeah, they're cringy.
Yeah,
sure.
Those definitely. But you know, simple stuff that you sit there thinking like, what happened to kayfabe?
Yeah,
who's that? I don't know. I'm old school, I guess.
Yeah, Botchamania is fun though. You should catch it because they keep it lighthearted, I guess.
I like the backyard wrestling botches.
Yeah,
that's like. You know, yeah, well, it's pretty tough to watch.
Those kids
have
so much creativity, though. Say what you will about backyard wrestling. They're doing their dream to the most of their ability. Right?
Yeah, but the problem is their ability.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, to the most of their ability.
Right.
Didn't say how much.
But anyone that's watching that may not be aware, Paul here had a very extensive tag team run in the WWE as world champion with Brian Kendrick. You were also a tag champ with Billy Kidman. You were cruiserweight champ. You were tag champ in PWG with El Generico.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Sami Zayn, for those that aren't aware of the indies. I really want Sami to bring back El Generico, by the way.
I want him to bring back Peligro Abejas, the killer bees, man.
Oh.
Yeah, but who knows? It's, you know, kudos to him for making such an amazing career out of going maskless, for having been under a hood for so long.
Yeah.
You know, that's always the big question is, can they translate it over to a big company that favors facials?
Yeah, Earl favors facials.
I don't favor them. I give them.
What the fuck?
That's viral moment. That's a viral moment.
He means the ones you get at the sauna. Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't get a facial at
the TV
sauna.
Is right here.
Right here. Bro.
Right
I
here.
I mean, Billy and Chuck. Got far with him.
That's right.
But also something I learned, I wasn't aware of this. You teamed with Brian Danielson in PWG. Is that too?
Briefly. It wasn't even a sip of coffee. We were supposed to team, and we put out, you know, we did like this promo after a PWG show, and people seemed to really like that and everything. And then I dealt with an injury, and he had bookings, and it was one of those things that just didn't really materialize.
The stars didn't align.
Yeah, but we had been friends for quite a long time. I mean, I remember him sleeping on my couch in college. I went to school in San Marcos, Texas, and he would do shows in San Antonio because we were all under the tutelage of Rudy Boy Gonzalez in San Antonio, who was really the real hands-on trainer at Shawn Michaels Academy.
Nice.
So he's responsible for a lot of guys. But yeah, Danielson and I go way back, and he's just such a good guy. You know, the big misconception is that he was under the influence in that promo, but I can tell you, he definitely wasn't.
He's a sober guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you?
I can't say the same for that promo. But
good. No judgments here.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you know, unlock the creativity and just have fun with it, I think. But you know.
That's cool.
Definitely longer in the tooth now.
Yeah. I mean, you consider yourself, I would say, like a tag team specialist. I mean, did you have a significant, aside from the cruiserweight run, was there like a significant singles run for you?
You know, when I had the cruiserweight title for a while, I did the very best I could with it. I had procured that title in Houston days before we came out to LA for WrestleMania 25. And so I was able to perform on the Hollywood Walk. They set up a ring out there. You know, leading up to WrestleMania, they do this like a week long of appearances and festivities and shows and things like that. And so that was a real cool thing to be on the Hollywood Walk, kind of main eventing this show as the new Cruiserweight champion. But that was also kind of a short-lived title run just because it was one of those things where you start to realize where you stand in the company or where you don't stand at all. Mm. And, you know, for example, you know, we would do, you know, obviously the non-televised shows are called house shows. So we'd be at house shows and Teddy Long at the time was the GM. So he would come out beforehand and be like, "Oh, players, thanks for coming. We're going to run down the tonight's festival with John Cena's in the house." And like, so-and-so's in the house. And he would list off, you know, the names. And he would list every title except mine.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. And it was like, "The popcorn serving champion is here." You know, like, "Drinks are served. Aisle for," you know. But he wouldn't say my title. And I went up to him. I said, "Teddy, like, do we have heat or something? Like, what is my title not good enough to mention?" And you know, he just was embarrassed. He was like, "Oh, player, sorry, man. I'm just going off of what they told me to say here." Mm. And you know, and so it was just like, well, I guess this title doesn't mean shit here. And so I went and spoke with Eddie Guerrero, who's really the guy. He was the locker room leader, not just in my opinion, but in most guys' opinion. You know, a lot of people will say, like, well, Taker was always the locker room leader, but I always saw him as kind of the mafia don. Mm. And you know, because he wasn't as approachable, whereas like Eddie was extremely approachable and so just very giving and generous with advice and knowledge. So I went up and I asked him, I said, you know, this is kind of frustrating. I feel like I'm a Ferrari just garaged the whole time, you know, like this is very frustrating. He goes, well, he signs your checks, doesn't he? I go, well, I think it's a stamp or a copy, but I get what you're saying. It's his name. He goes, well, then go talk to him. And that was one of those early lessons I learned kind of the hard way where I thought, okay, we all work here. I have just as much a say, I think, in what I'm doing. I certainly care about my craft and what I'm, you know, involved in. I am going to say something. And I went up just very respectfully and just mentioned how I didn't think the title had any kind of credibility or attention on it or anything. And pretty much the very next week, I ended up dropping the title on Velocity, God. Which Ooh. Is like it was at the time the Spike TV weekend show.
And then like it became, a Sunday Night Heat type of thing?
Yeah, yeah. For SmackDown, it was the SmackDown equivalency of Sunday Night Heat.
Gotcha.
So, you know, that was the writing was on the wall. But I looking back on it, it's somewhat of a tarnished feather in my cap, I guess, where it's like, I was the only guy to lose a title on this
Velocity.
Fucking, yeah, God. This weekend show that nobody watched.
That's that shows you, you know, the pettiness of the old regime over at WWE,
yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
There was a lot of it. There was a lot of it. I've noticed that, you know, the richer guys are, the wealthier they are, a lot of times the easier it is to hurt their feelings.
Mm.
You know, they're very fragile. And I'll never make that kind of money, not that I know of.
You don't know that yet.
Who's
one idea, bro?
Say, right? That's right.
Yeah, you're
that's
one
what,
idea
that's
away.
That's what we're out here for, right? We're all spinning the lotto wheels.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, do you still train? Do you still wrestle?
Yeah, I still train. I haven't wrestled in quite a while, just mainly by choice. I mean, I get booking offers quite a lot, but there comes a point when you get kind of, I don't want to use the term burnt out, but you start looking for other things. You start looking for new ways to be stimulated in the craft. And, you know, you can only do the same type of match or a similar variation of a match. Or, you know, it gets kind of boring sometimes. And, you know, that was one thing that I really took a lot of joy at when I worked at Lucha Underground, because that was something that really, we just kind of blew off the lid of creativity. I mean, we had people dying on the shows.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, it was just, it was really, really fun.
Yeah.
But I still, yeah, I do still train. It's funny you mention that, because I, you know, there's, I'm sitting on a booking right now that they need an answer by tonight. Mm. And,
tell us the booking and we'll tell you if you should take it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty savvy in the indie world. I can maybe say yes or no.
And I'm a good businessman.
Oh, nice. Well, I mean, it's a friend of mine and they want me to replace someone who's stood them up a few times now, and this is kind of the final straw. Mm. And, you know, but I was given the, you know, no pressure, no pressure, because we're boys. Mm. But if you don't think you're ready or want to do it, we'll probably just cancel the whole show.
Oh, the whole show?
No, no pressure. Yeah. Just the whole show's on
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
You're a big name. So, like,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
It, would it be a regular, like you say, to you, a boring match you've done 1,000 times before and you're just you're hesitant because of that?
Yeah, I don't know that it's now. It's so much of it. A lot of it is it's a lot of mental holdups. To be honest with you, where you know you feel rusty, and you feel like you're not really in the best shape that you want to be. You know, you have certain standards. You know, like you guys have standards that you'll
not really.
You'll
live. No, we have zero standards.
Well, no matter how low they might be, they're standards nonetheless. But you know, you try to feel good about what you're doing. And but then there's that part where it's just like, well, you know what, like, screw it, I just need to jump in the water and just get my
pull the band-aid again. Off
yeah me. Because every time I've done that, it's you know, it, as I say, like riding a bike. But yeah, I think the thing too for me is I watch, when I do see wrestling, it's probably blasphemy to say this, but so much of it is just so stupid.
Like what? Give me some examples. What do you consider stupid?
Well,
the ass boys.
Like, you said it.
By the way, I just bought 2 shirts on AEW.
Well, I grew up in a martial arts system. I did martial arts for a good portion of my life, and I'm a huge fan of martial arts cinema. And just, anyways, so most wrestlers tend to block punches and kicks with their face. and I've never witnessed a bar fight where it was like, you, me. And I just sit there like, man, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Well, you've never seen a Tex Cobb fight. All he did.
I would love to. I love Tex Cobb.
Oh, he's one of my favorite boxers, just for his ability to take punishment and smile at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are very few guys that are, or ladies that go out there and do proper, like, I guess, just maneuvers, like moves, like blocking, like you said.
Yeah.
Like Malachi Black does a really good job at that, because he actually trains.
Yeah, he's
Muay Thai.
He's a great
so
martial
he gets
artist.
Punched, he puts his arms up. He's blocking with his elbows, you know. And by the way, you know, best of luck to you, Malachi Black, for taking some time off. You know, that whole, I heard some stuff. I'm not going to repeat it, but
big fan of his. Oh, worked with him a
take
lot.
Take your time and come back when you're ready, brother.
Take your time and come back for All or Nothing.
Yeah, there you go.
No, big fan of his. And that's kind of what, you make choices. You think, am I going to go out there and kind of just have like a fun match? Do I want to go out there and have a match that lends itself to credibility? See, the thing is, the cat's been out of the bag for decades. You know, when Vince was like, we're not, this isn't wrestling, this isn't sport, this is sports entertainment. You know, like, please don't test us. Don't test us for steroids. We're just entertainment.
We're making movies.
Yeah. You know, so really the challenge is, everybody knows this is hokey, set up, predetermined, whatever they want to use.
Really?
But Santa Claus does exist.
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Don't hear those stupid rumors of it being your parent, because that's all bullshit.
Don't tell me Akeem wasn't from Africa.
No. So, you know, I look at it as, I'm a huge proponent of selling. That's really, I think, how I made most of my living. Can you convince the audience that what they're seeing, even in that moment, might actually be real? That actually, I'm pretty sure he fucking caught him there. I'm pretty sure that hurt. I have a feeling these guys actually don't like each other. Mm. Then you got him.
You know, you got them, as opposed to just like, well, let's do this routine that worked in Poughkeepsie, you know, and like, oh, that'll work. Like, let's do this thing. Oh, well, I'll tell you something that'll, this is guaranteed to pop the crowd. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that, where I just think, like, don't you want to kind of like try something else? Don't you, you know?
It's just too choreographed.
It really is. It really is. And
just like,
especially on like the Wednesday nights. It's super choreographed.
Well, I would figure you'd be a little more of a fan since you kind of were more, you know, the cruiserweight.
Sure.
The high flying, the moves that you would do is kind of popular now. Like, that's the thing in AEW. Some of them don't do it right. Some of them are pretty green. You know, if I talk to a lot of old schools, like Josh Barnett gives him shit all the time for standing around outside waiting for the flip.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, why are you standing around holding each other?
Why? Why?
Move back.
Yeah, just get out of the way.
That's why honestly. I love Samoa Joe. He does the walk off.
Right. Right.
Like people jump and he's just like, no. Like, fuck you
right.
Guys.
And that's really kind of what it is when you work in an intelligent way that makes sense, no matter how simple it might be, just walking out of the way.
Yeah.
That generates a great response because the audience is literally thinking the exact same thing. They're like, who the hell would stand here in a group of guys just kind of doing, you know, awkward hugs while they wait.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just, you can only see that so many times. You're just like, what else is on, you know?
Well, then they all go down like Lee Harvey Oswald was in the upper corner. Like, maybe one be hurt, but like all seven guys are knocked out.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So if you were to do this booking, I mean, can you still do all those high fly moves you used to do, or would you change your style up a bit more to be more grounded, or just, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely be altered. I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm no spring chicken, but it would definitely be, you know, just kind of limit your bumps in a sense. You know, I think everyone has a bump card where you only have so many until you're just like, man, I can't get out of bed.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet, fortunately. With proper repetition and conditioning, yeah, I could do that stuff. Okay. Does it make a lot of sense to under certain circumstances? Not always, you know. Something I like to use with promoters is, you know, you get what you paid for, but maybe a little extra. But, you know, you're not going to – it's a matter of working smarter, you know. If you go for X amount of dollars and go balls out to where you're killing yourself for, you know, a hot dog and a handshake,
yeah.
You know, and then, you know, and then you're going elsewhere. Yeah. And, you know, you want to work smarter. I see so many guys that are literally killing themselves for nothing. You know, and I get the drive behind it. You know, you're aiming to impress. But like, you know, I think as you get older, you start, your priorities change. You know, you think like, man, like I have this thing, this commitment tomorrow, or I've got, you know, headshots
right.
coming up. I, you know, to try not to hit me in the face or knock my teeth out and...
So you it's know. Easy. You can say that you're not going to be doing any death matches anytime soon.
No, I like a lot of those guys. I mean, obviously, you know, Ron put us in touch, and I have quite a few friends who do death match stuff, and I can marvel at it, and it's very entertaining, but I would never.
Yeah, I find it entertaining too, but I also have that, what you were saying, where like you see it and you're like, man, like you're like in a small place,
right?
Like you're not making enough money to be bleeding that much,
right? Right.
You're at the Derby in Pomona.
Yeah,
yeah.
Where I mean, imagine. Yeah. Well, I mean, imagine the guy making your Subway sandwich starts bleeding all over it, you know, and you're just like,
"What happened? I had a match last night."
Yeah. You know.
If I walk into a Subway and Dirty Ron's making my sandwich. I'm going to Quiznos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just have a cookie.
I'll have something you haven't made.
Yeah.
Well, is it in this potential booking, would you do it if you trusted the guy you were in the match with? I would imagine at this point, too, it's also do you trust your opponent to help you?
Yeah. I mean, I know who would be with, and like he's extremely athletic. And so that's another thing is you think, man, if somebody's really just jazzed up to work with me, which, you know, I'm not trying to jerk myself off or anything, but
please don't.
That's a different show.
Not on camera.
Right.
You end up getting booked and they're like, you know, we want to put our our newest, you know, hottest prospect against you and this, and we're expecting 20-star match and want you to go a half hour and all this stuff. You want to be able to exceed the hopes and expectations of your peers. But then there comes sometimes some mental blocks. You're sitting there thinking, like, man, and I am my own worst critic. Like, I eviscerate myself regularly.
As most creatives do.
Yeah. So you sit there and you think, like, man, is this going to be something where they were totally let down, you know, even though what we did made sense and it was safe enough, you know, and we had fun doing it. Are they going to be upset because I didn't want to take, you know, the 620 sidewinder onto the concrete, you know, or, you know, are they, you know, and so, and it, that happens, you know, where they're just like, nah, he didn't want to do anything. And like, ah, he didn't want to take this. And he, you know, it's like, well, yeah, man, I'm like twice your age and we have different priorities, you know? Like,
yeah.
But I will help you understand how to get mileage out of what you're doing. I'll help you understand not to throw so much of your shit away. Mm. And that's another thing that I see that just kind of annoys me. You know, you can only see so many Canadian destroyers, and like, now super kicks don't mean anything. You know? They don't mean anything.
They need at least four or five before someone even goes down these days.
Well, even just a punch, you know, a lot of guys will do like this peppering of the punch just to back someone up to the ropes. And then they'll shoot him off and the guy will reverse it. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, your punches didn't mean shit.
Mm.
How many, again, I always liken it to a bar fight, you know, because that's kind of how I approach it now, is how would this look and be, how would this go down in a bar fight? And if you come at it with that approach, it already starts to, it should start to make some sense, at least from a selling standpoint, you know, because even something as, you know, you see guys, the Canadian destroyer, they nip up, they kick you, they give you a Canadian destroyer, they nip up, and then they're both just like this, it's like,
yeah,
I guess none of that hurt. I guess none of that hurt. And this kid looks like he works at Cold Stone Creamery. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That didn't break this kid's neck? Are you kidding me?
Well, but okay, so you worked in Lucha Underground, and I mean, there's a lot of that in Lucha.
Sure, there is. And Lucha is very dancey.
Yeah.
It's very dancey. It's you know, less high impact kind of bumps. It's a lot of tumbling, and it's very choreographed, you know what I mean? And so... but there's a beauty to it when it's done
proper
to the style. Yeah. And again, I think, you know, it's as I tell young, hungry minds, any marquee in any country, the common word is wrestling. So if you have at least a foundation of wrestling and an understanding of what and how that should at least appear, then you're already kind of off on the right foot. You're doing good. But if your concerns are more so about frosting as opposed to the cake itself, you know, it's, you're making your job a lot harder.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, it's funny though, you guys mentioned, you know, super kicks don't mean anything to me. And like, my favorite thing right now is when the Young Bucks super kick Sting and he just stared at them like totally no soul, that as a joke. But then it was like, oh, okay, then your super kicks don't really hurt. Like, it kind of ruined the super kick for the Young Bucks anyway. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you can't knock down a 63-year-old guy? And that Sting,
it might have been because they hit him in the shoulders. I don't know. But you're right.
Yeah, wait, by the way, I don't want to go off topic. It's not part of our topics, but like, there's rumors that Sting is going to take over the House of Black. What do you?
I mean, didn't I say that though?
Like, you did. That's why I brought it up. I'm like,
well, you're probably the better person to ask. Like, you take a 63-year-old, and he's in great shape. You know, I was watching Lethal Lottery the other day, which was a 91 pay-per-view, WCW, 40 guys, 10 are dead. And I'm not
right.
Fun
no,
of that
no,
at
no.
All.
That's the sad reality of the business.
And then you know, you've got a guy like Abdullah the Butcher who is near dead, right. And then Sting is still wrestling in 63. Right. He was teamed up with Abdullah.
It's crazy.
Like, what would you think? Of, like an older, like I think you you're using his name as the marquee. He doesn't really have to wrestle with House of Black. You know, that would be a good move if you were a booker, right?
Sure.
Using Sting in that capacity.
Yeah, it definitely lends itself to credibility and helps elevate guys. You know what I mean? I think Sting is in a – obviously, he's a legend, so he's in a position where he can call whatever shots make sense to him. Yeah. You know, I'm not taking that. That sounds good, this and this. I kind of prefer 20 years late Joker Sting.
I don't like that Sting.
Oh, man. That was
– Did you ever work with him?
No. I've met him a few times but never had a chance to work with him. I've seen – he did like some Christian wrestling movie.
Oh, yeah.
I saw once, too. That was I mean, I dug the Crow Sting when it was first out and about. I liked it more than the Rat Tail.
Surfer dude?
Yeah.
It had a good run, but probably went a little too far.
Right, right. But yeah, man, that Joker Sting was my favorite.
Who's the biggest, in your eyes, the biggest legend that you've worked with?
Eddie Guerrero? Rey Mysterio.
Nice.
Biggest guy physically, monster-wise, Brock Lesnar.
Oh, yeah.
That was your first match in WWE, right?
Yeah, if you can call it that. It was slaughter.
Well, you talk about realism. I mean, if I saw you and Brock Lesnar in a room.
Right. It should go the way that it did.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you're jacked, I can tell.
No.
Like, you can kick my ass, but that's why I'm a comic.
No, man.
How was that match like? I'm curious how you work a match with Lesnar. I mean, does he call it and go, hey, I'm going to pick you up and then pin you?
You know, when you're on TV, you got these producers who are usually legendary guys. Arn Anderson was our particular producer for that match. And I was still pretty new in the company, even though I had been working for quite a while. This is after all my independent stuff. So it was, I think they were still familiarizing themselves with me, like, well, hey, what can you do? Well, if you close on me, I'll 360. I've been like, really? Okay, let's do that. If you, do you mind taking this? Yeah, yeah. Do you mind if I pick you up and slam you down? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was raised in the sense that, like, you shut up and listen, but you lend yourself to whatever the veteran is up for, and you pretty much when they ask you for suggestions, then you offer them, but you don't sit there and you try and take, you know, you don't sit there, well, look, if you don't mind, I had this idea, you maybe the F5, I'll kick out at one. You know, you're asking for it,
right. Yeah.
And that was probably the closest I've ever felt to physically being inside of a tornado.
Oof.
I mean, you're really, you know, you develop a timing for your bumps, you develop a timing for when you get thrown and things. But even then, with that, it was almost like an extended 5 or 6 seconds, and then the bump, and then here comes,
he spins you, and then you,
oh man,
like,
it was crazy. And just really, just the strongest. Just freak strength. You know, I've never dealt with anything like that before. But it didn't injure me or anything, you know. It feels great.
Yeah.
But it didn't injure me. So then afterwards, the mutual respect is there. And he was cool to me. Not that he wasn't cool to me, but I literally just met him that day.
Mm.
And then from then on out, where he would normally not say hi to most guys, he was always very cool with me. Say hi to me, talk for a little bit. Like, he was just always cool. So, like, in a way, that means more to me than, like, who won or lost or whatever.
Right, right,
like,
yeah.
To develop the respect of your peers, and especially of top guys, you know, that, that means, that goes a long way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, let me ask you something, and, you know, this is no disrespect to you. Like, you've had a very long reign as tag champ, but you mentioned top guys.
Yeah.
And back in the Vince days, top guys were all, you know, big guys.
Sure.
So cruiserweights like yourself were kind of like...
fodder.
Like, was there... yeah, pretty much. So, like, was there ever a conversation about that? Because, I mean, you've worked with some of the best people in the world.
Sure.
and you had a very long tag reign and everything, but why wasn't there a push for you to go, like, to become a top guy? Was it just body? Was it really just that?
I never played into the game, as they say. And I'm not going to sit here and... Yeah. Well, that could be part of it. That could be part of it. Pat was great. Okay. He was great. Say what you will. I mean, he was... I know what you're saying now, but he was one of my... he championed for me a lot.
Oh, that's great.
So there were a lot of guys. A lot of the old school legendary guys were big fans of my work. And I think that helped keep me around longer than possibly, you know, Vince might have wanted or whatever. Because Vince and I never, I mean, I can think of maybe one or two times where we might have had a positive conversation. Not that, like, we ever had really bad interactions, you know. I mean, there was that, obviously, there were some bad interactions. But I just never seemed to be on his good side. And I'm not the kind of guy who goes to work and, like, hey, you know, good to see you. How's the family?
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, oh, hey, I bought this protein. I just happen to have an extra one. Why don't you take it? Hey, okay. Oh, wait, I'm going to get some burgers and drink. Hey, who wants some? You know, like, it depends who your friends are. And there's a lot of that stuff. But I just, I always wanted my work to speak for itself. And hoped that should be good enough without having to put on the lipstick or anything, you know? And so, but, you know, it works for some, and some just don't want to go down that route.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of guys that I respect, you know, like Rob Van Dam's a friend of mine, and I never witnessed him kind of playing into that. Now, mind you, he's a big guy, and he's just an insane talent, you know, one of a kind talent. But you get into these situations where you make those choices, like, am I gonna kind of go into this kind of political atmosphere and go all in and say I have my say and be involved and do this and do whatever I got to do to be that? And it just, I don't know. I wanted to kind of respect what I kept seeing in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, I would recommend that you do take this booking. I'd like to see you work again.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
And also, I feel that the current state of wrestling, you will shine a bit more. Because, like, you know, the AEW has a lot more of the cruiserweights, a lot more of the high-flying.
Sure.
But even now, the new Triple H, WWE.
Yeah.
Is also bringing in indie guys and kind of lending itself to a more, you know, like, more about the athleticism than just muscles. And,
right.
You know what I mean? So maybe that booking would spark the flame for you to maybe come back to TV, you know what I mean?
Yeah, who knows? It might lead me to a cliffside somewhere, but yeah, I've been toiling with it for a while now just because... It is a privilege, you know, at the end of the day, to be able to perform in front of people, whether it's at a rec center or an arena or a stadium. I mean, it is a privilege, you know, just as y'all know, being able to perform for a full house or just a handful of people. There's a privilege there. Not everyone gets that opportunity ever sometimes. And so I'm very grateful for everything that I've done. And, you know, I'm fortunate that there's still even just some interest at all.
Yeah, so, for sure.
You know, yeah.
Do you have any final questions before we jump into the stories and topics of the day?
I do.
Yeah, yeah, please.
You're a big guy to me.
No.
But like Eddie said, I mean, you know, it's like I've done some comedy clubs where, like, they're against edgy humor. So you go into the club kind of defeated already. Knowing that Vince, when you look at, most, not all, but most of his favorites, you know, Ultimate Warrior, Hogan, Sid,
sure,
Kevin Nash, The Undertaker, are these giant dudes. Did you ever just feel, not dispirited or brokenhearted, but I'll never be accepted by Vince because I'm only 6 feet, 200? Or, I mean, how did you deal with that, like, psychological block, if you had it?
I kept thinking... along the lines of, they will eventually either see it, my time will come, and they will, I will get that opportunity to show them that I can make them money, or I'm going to have to really figure out some other things, because I never got into wrestling to make money. It wasn't something that made sense to me. Like, you know, I think anybody who gets into wrestling to up their social media numbers or to make money is just, you're an idiot.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
We have enough of you. Like, we don't need any more people like that, you know?
For sure.
But if you are a true fan and you love, you know, the artistry behind it and you grew up loving it, or even if you didn't grow up loving it, but you fell into it at some point and really love it for what I think are kind of the right reasons, then it should be about the artistry. It should be about the illusion in a lot of ways too. I'm a huge proponent of kayfabe. I think that anyone who thinks kayfabe is dead, they're simply admitting that they lack the commitment to do it.
Mm.
You know, everyone knows it's fake, and like, man, everybody knows. It's like, yeah, but you don't need to have a blood feud on TV and then hop right on Twitter afterwards and thank the person and give them kisses and when are we going shopping and then post the pictures of yourself shopping with this.
Or have a vlog where you just hang out with your rival for some reason.
God,
my goodness.
I hate that shit so much. It disgusts me.
I do think the internet is somewhat ruined.
It has.
You know, it's like I was telling John, I was watching, I think it was a War Games where Sid and the Road Warriors and, you know, Ronnie Garvin, and like, it looked real. Like,
yeah.
And you can go on Twitter or Wikipedia and go, they're from the same hometown. They love each other. You know, and certainly World Class Championship Wrestling, which was, you know, a smaller.
World Class was great.
But like, there, you really did think it was real. Yeah. Like, Gary Hart and, like, you know, Kabbalah and Von Erichs. Like,
right.
Oh, they really hate the Von Erichs.
Right.
I mean, you can never go back to that. But just because the technology will prevent you from knowing.
Well, people could just stop posting.
Yeah, but that's never going to happen.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You got to up those numbers. You got to get, you know.
MJF pulled it off. He went and disappeared for 3 months. Didn't post shit. Didn't go anywhere. I mean,
and he's
no one knew
a great example of somebody who is his character, keeps in character throughout. It probably is, you know, I would think that's how he really is, you know, because you don't ever see, you know, that fourth wall broken, not with him.
Maybe, yeah, even at fan signings, I've seen him flip off little girls like and throw their autograph in the ground, like, get the fuck out of here. Like,
well, even this week, and although it happened on Twitter, there was a thread about the female ref, Aubrey, mugging. I guess it's a big deal because she's the first female ref to do a pay-per-view. And
she's always in the spotlight?
Yeah, and then MJF, I forget the exact tweet, but he said something like, total bitch. but you can tell he meant it. Like, so, I mean, maybe there could be. Maybe MJF is the one to carry the
kayfabe torch
somewhat back into the.
Who's to say? And if it's just him, then great. You know, I'm happy that somebody's still
doing it,
carries it. One of my mentors was Terry Funk.
Oh, man.
Who's a good mentor.
He was amazing. I credit him for, he got me into Ring of Honor initially. I love him. He's amazing. He told me a story once when, in the territory days, they were down in Corpus Christi, and it's, you know, heavy Mexican population down there. It's, you know, border town almost. And so he said, you know, I had so much heat during that event or during that show. I had so much heat. I had security getting around me to leave the ring, and we had to go straight to the car. And he goes, so I got in the car, and I'm sitting in the back seat, and I don't feel right, and I can't get comfortable. And we're driving, and I'm trying, you know, I'm just trying to get comfortable. And I said, you know, can we stop for a moment? And they're like, we need to get to the next town or whatever. And he's like, okay, well, I need a moment. And they're like, and the guy who's sitting back there, I guess it was like some handler or something, he was like, Terry, you have a dagger in your back. And like, yeah, someone had actually stuck him with a knife.
No.
As he was leaving the ring just to get to the car, and he was like, are you serious? Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, that's just another level.
Yeah, that's good. That's good heat right there, getting stabbed.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into some of these top stories real quick, because the first one that I have here, I'm actually going to, you know, I was actually joking with a few friends of mine that it might be you. WWE has been randomly playing White Rabbit at the arenas and shutting the lights out and then putting them back on in red. And obviously everybody assumes it's Bray Wyatt returning. And then at Raw, they had a QR code behind Austin Theory that if you scanned, it took you to a website, which was WWE.com/comewithme. And it was a little animated thing about some like Hangman game and basically saying that this SmackDown, we're going to get the reveal of whatever it is. But I was joking with people, like, if you watch Lucha Underground, it could be Paul London. He was part of the Bunny Crew in Lucha Underground. You had the White Rabbit, Killer Cross.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who's one of my best friends. We speak regularly.
Well, you should tell him that, you know, he's agreed to do this show, but, you know, ever since he went back over to WWE, it's kind of hard to get him down. You know?
Yeah.
He's probably seen clips of my stand-up. I'm good.
I'm good. But, yeah, I mean, so it's not you? You're not coming back to WWE on SmackDown?
Is that the gig? Is that the gig you're deciding on?
If it was, would I say yes or no?
No, man, don't break the mystery. Yeah, but how do you feel about that? Like, you know, they're playing around with something that, you know, was part of your gimmick at one point.
On one end, it's, you know, I had quite a few people contact me yesterday, and they were like, "You're trending. Did you know that? You're trending." Okay, you know, and on one end, that's flattering for people to at least acknowledge that that was something that I've done in terms of that character, because that was probably the most fun I've had in wrestling, was getting to do that bit with Lucha Underground. And I was on the creative team there, so it was more so, you know, when they presented this Rabbit Tribe thing to me, I initially thought, like, battle beasts. Mm. I was like, how do I make rabbits like intimidating or tough? Like, this doesn't make sense. And
yeah,
we went out and had a match, and I had matching outfits that weren't anything like what we had. And we actually had a different guy for one of our parts, and they were like, that's not really what we thought. We were thinking more Alice in Wonderland. And he didn't even have to finish Alice in Wonderland. I was like, I know exactly what what you mean. So then I sent like 9 or 10 pages of attachments of just like cod pieces. I was like, this guy needs a cod piece. Like, love it. His top hat, love it.
And I like the cod piece move.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I just took over that whole thing, and we had a blast with it. And so for people to be acknowledging it now, I mean, Lucha kind of suffered an untimely demise, what, like 2017, 18?
Yeah, maybe 19 even. I think season 4, did it not go up to 19? Maybe I'm wrong.
I would maybe 2017, okay. Sadly, maybe 18 at the moment. But either way, just for people to even speculate, it's cool. You know what I mean? That's neat.
I'm glad that people are giving it some love, man. Because people don't realize the amount of talent that was on that show.
Right.
Swerve and, you know, the Lucha
Ricochet.
Brothers. Ricochet.
Yeah.
Johnny Nitro.
Nitro, Mundo, Hennigan, Mundo, Comedy.
He was Mundo at the time. That was one of his 50,000 names. Yeah. He's a great dude, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's almost, I feel that at this point, if it's not Bray Wyatt, you're just going to piss everybody off. Because everybody assumes it's Bray Wyatt, you know, or you, obviously.
Right.
But like, some people are saying it could be Killer Cross. It could be, you know, them doing something with him. But
sure.
I feel like he just re-debuted. He doesn't really need a character change.
No, I wouldn't think that would make any sense.
So it doesn't make sense, you know?
Right.
But I'm kind of hoping it's Bad Bunny coming back.
That'll work.
I mean,
that'll work.
Piss everyone
that'll
off.
That'll work.
But to me, it makes more sense for Bray to go to AEW just from the standpoint of it's an easier schedule. He wants to get into Hollywood and
sure,
at least put his foot in the door there. Like, there's no house shows in AEW. I'm assuming he'd be on Dynamite only. I don't see him doing Rampage. Not that that's a bad show, but it's their
Is it a good show?
I mean, they do. I think they're trying to make it a little better. Like this Friday, it's 2 hours, which okay. I think is a foray into seeing if they could carry 4 hours of programming with a 3,800 person roster. I don't think that's a problem. But
that's really the only reason I don't think he should go to AEW, because there's so many people there.
Like, yeah, but he'd be given top TV time. So I don't, unless he's like the world's greatest guy and cares about other wrestlers,
sure,
I don't think he would care. Like, okay, sorry, Swerve. You're
do you put yourself in a situation where you know you have an idea of what you're going to be working with under Hunter's regime? Or do you sit there and think, like, you know, I guess, you know, I hear all these things about over here just there being no direction. And
people
no
are just yelling at their boss just, on national
just,
television.
Yeah, and this guy is just a goofball that, like, has no,
yeah,
you know, no balls. And is that something I really want to go?
Yeah.
And how long will that last for me? But, I mean, he's fortunately, he's in a position where he can probably pick and choose. And if one goes south, he can go to the other one, and
sure,
you know, that, yeah, that's good. It's a good position for him to be in.
Well, it's kind of like TNA, where, you know, like Sting, for example, went there because he didn't want to travel,
right?
You know, at that time, probably 50 or 45 ish. And I'm sure Bray is, how old is Bray around?
He's younger than me, I think.
So, how old is that?
The late 30s.
So, I would have, I mean, that's not there. Old, but that, you know, that's sure. As a 54 year old, I would kill to be 39. But I could see him saying to Tony Khan, listen, this is the deal. I'm doing this. I'm wrestling this person, that person. This is my travel schedule. Take it or leave it.
Right.
And here's the check I want.
Right.
Yeah, here's the number.
With six right. zeros behind it.
Right.
I don't see WWE giving him everything he wants.
I do. At this point, with Triple H, because, I mean, Triple H, he was from NXT. Like, that's his baby. So
right.
I feel like Trips would take care of him if he really wants him, which I don't see why he wouldn't. He was like the number one merch seller for like, it made zero sense that Vince cut that man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It
I
made
mean, I don't,
zero sense.
I
don't, so.
I think The Fiend was a step down from just being Bray Wyatt. I feel like that Bray Wyatt had a lot more legs to it than The Fiend.
Sure.
I thought The Fiend thing, like he had some cinematic match. Like the cinematic matches are
horseshit. I hate the cinematic match. He had one of the worst ones with Randy Orton, the House of Horrors bullshit.
They're so bad.
Oof, that was
why
a
are
nightmare.
They bad? Like, I kind of like.
It's just, it's just dumb. If I want to see a horror movie, I'll watch something that's actually well shot and well executed, and not just kind of stupid. You know, it's like, do I want to listen to the band itself, or do I want to listen to the Kidz Bop version?
Right.
You know, it just, Kidz Bop, of course.
now we're talking.
I liked The Fiend because, I mean, I have the fucking Joker right here. Like, he's the Joker.
Yeah.
And when they paired him with Alexa, that was his Harley. Like, it was like, oh, okay, we're getting this. We're getting Joker Harley in WWE, like that version. So I got behind it. But, you know, it still made zero sense why they cut him at the time. He was selling so much merch. I mean, they were burying him. They made him drop that belt to Goldberg in like 10 seconds, which
yeah.
is ridiculous.
Well, I mean,
as a Jew, I'm glad Goldberg won.
Goldberg's cool, man. He's a cool guy. Very,
so I've heard.
Very cool
so
guy, heard. Yeah. yeah.
Well, probably at this point, he is a little older. He's mellowed out. He's not quite as aggro as maybe, you know, Bret Hart would.
Right.
You know, I'm sure he was thrust into the limelight pretty fast.
Sure.
That had to cause a lot of enemies, I would imagine. Like, here's this football player.
Yeah.
Virtually no training. And he's, you know,
smashing
everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you think that went over in the locker room, like, with the older guys, like Nash and even Sting? And, like, hey, who's this guy?
Since I don't think Sting was put in his path of destruction, I'm sure it wasn't too much of a threat to Sting, but I'm sure there was a ton of guys that were thinking, you know, who the fuck is this guy? Let's just bring this football guy here and he's going through everybody. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know that too many guys were stepping up to him and saying anything about it.
Right, 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 right.
I mean, yeah. But, you know, The thing that I liked the most, though, going back on The Fiend, was the mask, I guess, just because that was made by Tom Savini.
Oh, yeah. Tom Savini and Jason Baker. Shout out to them.
Yeah. So, but I think Bray Wyatt has a cool enough look.
Alone
as he
the
is, yeah, you know that hillbilly also really dug the swamp guy thing that he's doing. I thought, like, that still
I
has,
love that. That's
yeah,
my
I
favorite.
Think that still has a lot of way to go with that. You
yeah,
know?
You could like, I'm not saying put him in House of Black, but like, there's some interesting matchups I think in AEW. You know that would
yeah.
be
yeah.
cool. And
no, I'd like to see him there wrestle, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I don't know. I liked the multiple personality thing too. Where, like, he'd come out as Bray Wyatt.
Yeah,
with a sweater and like Mr. Rogers, and then also would come out as The Fiend as a separate thing. I don't know. He's just a very creative mind. I really don't care where he goes. I just hope he shows up soon. And
I mean, I was a fan of his dad. I really thought he was an IRS agent. How cool is that? They're bringing this guy on the road with these guys. Oh, he wrestles too.
Got to do your taxes even when you're on the road, man.
All you tax cheats.
Keep those receipts.
But yeah, last thing on the whole thing that maybe people didn't really pick up on. I did. Alexa Bliss has been bringing the doll around again, which she had dropped for a bit. So that may be hinting towards the Wyatt return. And also, when she cut a promo on Bayley, she referenced a line from the song White Rabbit. She called Bayley, you know, you think you're 10 feet tall and blah, 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 which is right from the song. It's like, well, you're kind of giving it away there. But maybe I'm just overthinking, overreading it, overanalyzing.
They strike me as the kind of people who show you the entire movie in the trailer.
Probably, right? Yeah, for sure. Next story, Survivor Series announced that they will have 2 War Games matches. I think that's fantastic. I'm excited about that because I've been saying it for years that Survivor Series needs to go back to the old school Survivor matches where you had teams and, you know, and it wasn't just brand teams. It was like a Hogan's team versus, you know, this guy's team. I love that. And, even though this isn't that, it's still kind of like something new and different than the crap we've been getting in the last couple of years.
I mean, I'm such a WCW guy that I can't associate War Games with WWE.
Oh,
yeah, it's
even
tough,
though they belong to the
right?
same company now.
I know it's all one big family. I didn't say happy family, but I just, you know.
Well, it's like WWE presents Clash of the Champions. It's like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it doesn't.
But I'm, you know, I'm sure younger kids don't even know
don't
what WCW was,
right.
which is crazy.
Right.
To people like between our age.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't.
I mean, Survivor Series is and should be it's a time-tested formula, like you were saying, going back to kind of the old way where I always thought it was best when the survivors of the matches on the undercard all came back for that final match at the end where it was like the sole survivors, and now they're like doing like I don't know if they did that every year, but there was a few years when it was
1v4, you know.
Yeah. And it was like whoever survived from these undercard matches all came back for like that final match.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool too, because then it's kind of just this one night tournament kind of thing.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, I missed that from King of the Ring too. The King of the Ring started like that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think it's cool. I think the only thing that's going to suck is not having William Regal come out and say War Games. But aside from that, it should
be
a fun night.
He might come out like,
hey, yeah. Who knows? The money might be right.
Well, they did that, what, in NXT? Is that when they first introduced it? And, you know, Roderick Strong's a buddy of mine. I'm a big fan. I thought that faction they had with, like, Adam Cole and O'Reilly.
Undisputed Era?
Yeah, I mean, that seemed to be a pretty
that was great
hot match,
it was, yeah,
right?
It was very old-school style, NWO kind of, you know, a DX kind of
vibe cool.
to it. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I saw a clip, actually, yesterday of Adam Cole, like, William Regal standing there, and then Adam Cole in the back without a mic just yelling, "Say it! Say it, please! Please say it! Ah!" And then he's like, War Games!
Oh,
so stupid. Yeah. Anyway, third topic I got here is very painful to me. I'm sure John in the booth here is very excited about Logan Paul versus Roman Reigns in Saudi Arabia. But boy, am I going to force myself to watch that match.
I'm just excited because Roman Reigns' promo during that press conference was just spot on.
Yeah. They were good.
Those promo, I think he's doing improv for the promos. He's fucking crushing it.
Yeah.
He's going to destroy Logan Paul.
Roman's really on a new level.
Right.
I think Logan Paul's going to get squashed bad.
I fucking hope so, dude. This is ridiculous.
I mean, it's not quite like putting the belt on David Arquette, but right. I will give Logan Paul this. And to a legit wrestler like you, you're probably like, dude, he does seem to at least be somewhat trained.
Well, he has a wrestling background, doesn't he? I think, or something. I don't.
He
I
does. He did wrestle.
But like
he
with did, the suicide right? dives, he okay. does seem like he's
putting in the work.
I don't mind it as much, but I also don't think he should be against Roman Reigns at this point.
Yeah, it seems a little forced.
Like to the boys in the back, how do you think that's going over? You know. It's just YouTube, son of a bitch.
Yeah, but I think, you know, when they see him, it's like, can we get a picture?
I need to bump in my numbers.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah. But what does that say, too, about the state of the roster where, you know, like you said, Bad Bunny will come in and perform better than half the roster. And it's like he hasn't even, he just started learning this like just a little while ago or something. And it's like stunt casting, I guess, you know? But
well, I think honestly, this really doesn't have a lot to do with Triple H or any of those people. I think it has a lot to do with the Saudi prince dumping a shit ton of money to get Logan Paul over there.
Yeah, possibly.
And I think that's what it is. I think he's like, I want the biggest match. I want the biggest star in YouTube versus your guy.
Bring that YouTuber TikToker over here. We want him.
I wasn't going to do the accent because I can't do it right.
I couldn't either.
Somebody else. But I just can't even I'm not excited for it. I mean, I'm gonna watch the pay-per-view, but I'm just not happy about it. We'll see what happens. But anyway, next up we had Malakai Black, which I already talked about. You know, we wanted to bring it up and just say, you know, take your time and come back.
So what's his deal? Is he taking a break?
It's just mental health break. You know, he's had some family issues. Again, I mean, I don't know if he made a public statement on his page. That he's had a lot of like family issues and friends pass away and stuff like that. So he just needs some time to recalibrate.
Good.
So hopefully,
good
you know,
for him.
Good
I mean,
for him.
Not good that he's
right. Yeah.
Well, how did you I would say wrestling and comedy share one thing in common: a lot of death.
Sure.
You know, I just lost two comedy friends last week, and I wasn't even sad. Like, I was sad for like 5 minutes, and then all right, what am I eating today?
Sure.
And obviously, you know, in pro wrestling. It seems like five or so die a year. Like, how did you deal with that, losing friends and coworkers?
It's jarring, you know, when you first hear it. And then I think when you see, there's different parts of it. You know, there's a lot of people who you think, man, they're on borrowed time. Like, how have they not died already?
Right.
I hate to say it.
Yeah.
But then a lot of times when it is somebody, you know, like we had lost a buddy, Lance Cade, a while back, but as far as you could tell, he was great shape and this and this and this. You know, we don't know exactly what everyone's vices are outside of the business. But it's just, you know, really, not to sound cliche, but you sit there and you think like, man, this could all end for anybody at any moment, because so much of it can be. It just, a lot of it doesn't make sense. Our valet, who I was in a relationship with at the time, Ashley, had taken her own life several years ago. This is, I think, right before the pandemic. And, you know, I had a bunch of people messaging me like, so sorry. I thought, like, what are you all sorry about? And then I hopped on. I was like, what? Like, what? I don't know. It's never easy. I don't like to think that like, oh, well, you know, like we just kind of expect that we're going to lose a handful of people this year. It's just a matter of who it is.
Yeah.
You never want to see anybody lose their life. But you know, that is something, going back to Malakai, he's Tommy to me.
Yeah, Tommy.
I'm glad he's acknowledging that he needs
Some time
away.
Yeah.
Because people the mental aspect of it is not something that gets talked about enough.
Yeah, and people don't take the time. Like, people bury it and they move on. I got to keep working. Like I've lost, you know, I've found myself with that too. Like I lost a friend not too long during the pandemic and I buried it. And I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to keep working. And then every once in a while, I'll just have one night where it, like, it all crumbles, you know? It's like, oh, God. You know, so I'm glad he's taking that time. We're almost running out of time, so I just want to bring two more things. No worries. We're not going to get to the topic, but that's okay. Two things I want to bring up real quick before we leave. Kenny Omega showed up in Japan at the Tokyo Game Show, and visibly, you could see the bite mark. It was on his arm. But what people are bringing up is that in the position that it's in, it almost seems like he did like a rear naked choke on someone and they bit him to get out of it.
I've been there.
That's what I'm saying. So,
and that was in a fight or in a personal.
Oh, I guess you don't know. So CM Punk during a press conference, like talked a lot of shit about the Bucks and Kenny.
I heard about that.
And there was a backstage scuffle afterwards and everybody got suspended. And there was rumors that Kenny was bit by Ace Steel, who's CM Punk's dude, and you could see the actual bite mark at this Japanese game show thing. So it did happen, but now we don't really know. Like, just because of the angle, it looks like maybe Kenny came up from behind, and who knows? We don't really know the story.
Did they have their shots?
Have you
seen Omega lately?
And the last thing I want to bring up that I didn't even put it in my notes, but I love it so much. I really love the whole Dominic Mysterio, Rhea Ripley thing. The fact that Rhea Ripley's pussy is basically the pallbearer's urn right now to Dominic Mysterio is the greatest thing in the world to me.
Say some of the things I say are whack.
That's how we're ending the episode?
Oh, my goodness.
That's a great way to end the episode.
It's a great way to end the episode.
Hey, let's talk about Undertaker's hemorrhoids.
I'm going to be honest, just on that last point, I'm more upset that Dominic Mysterio is on the main roster than I am about Logan Paul.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But hey, how does that affect the boys in the back when you see, I guess, a legacy person on the roster who might not be ready yet? Is very much like the Logan Paul or David Arquette thing. Like, hey, what's this guy on the roster for over
right
us? Does that bother people in the back, or is it case by case?
Yeah, I think it's case by case. I mean, Ray's so beloved by everybody that, and you know, I remember Dominic as a kid being backstage, so you know, if I were there now, it probably wouldn't bother me in a sense, just because. But will his work come through and speak for itself? You know, like that's kind of the telling aspect right there. Is he good? If he's not and he's still getting these opportunities, then there's more reason to be kind of bothered by it. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I haven't been interested in anything he's done up until this very moment. This whole Rhea Ripley thing is amazing. The nuclear heat he got in San Jose, by the way. My God, I haven't heard anyone get that reaction since Roman in New York. The dude came out and they gave him the mic and everyone exploded. It was just chaos. If you haven't seen that clip, check it out. You see, he's doing something right. That's all I'm saying. If they did it right, because everyone hates him now.
Yeah.
You know?
Hate is good. And
hate is good, man. Lots of heat.
That's
right.
But
anyway, Paul London, it's been an honor to have you here.
All right, cool. Thanks, man.
Thank you for coming
on, guys.
We'll get to my questions next episode.
Hey, you got it. No sweat.
Where can people find you on the internet and stuff like that?
I'm really just on Twitter and Instagram at LondonFoo, LONDONFU. It's more for like kung fu, not
fuck you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, London Foo. I don't post so much just because I'm just...
Kayfabe?
I'm just kidding. I don't need just the constant, like, interaction.
It's not your thing. Like, it's some people, it's not. I hate it myself.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
As we both have to do it. Eddie has to do it. Like,
right. Yeah, it's something I kind of need to pick back up, but... Yeah, you know, it's getting there.
Well, hopefully we'll see you in a wrestling ring soon if you take that booking. You can find me at RRBG Podcast, where I interview a bunch of musicians and athletes and comedians. Recently I just dropped one with Dennis from Refuse, which I'm very happy with. Earl, where do they find you?
You know, I'm not going to tell people. I'm going to plug someone else who needs the money more than I do. You can find me at www.KamalaSpeaks.com.
Yes.
Buy his book. It's probably not going to be autographed anymore, but Just tell Merle sent you. Kenny, his manager, will just sign a Kamala. It's the same thing.
And please make sure you follow Comedy Store Wrestling on Instagram, at Store is War on Twitter. Email us, comedystorewrestling@gmail.com, with any suggestions or anything like that. And once again, thank you for joining us. Cheers.